totally wrong about me. I just saw that as an amazing contrast. The friends that are like the dried up brooks that, you know, sure, in the winter when you don't need water, you know, they're overflowing their banks. But when it's hot and dry and you're dying of thirst, then you go and you try to find water. It's very confusing because there isn't any there. And you contrast that with the happy person that on their pilgrimage, when they go through the valley of weeping, they dig a well. I want to be that kind of person. I did write a whole album full of songs when I was in the valley of weeping, thinking that maybe they would be like springs for people who would hear them later. And some people have responded that way. There's all kinds of things you can do. You can journal. You can draw close to the Lord. You can write those scriptures down, because I guarantee you, because of what it says in Corinthians, that God comforts us in our trouble so that we can comfort others in any trouble with comfort that we have received from Him. That's part of His plan. So if we draw close, I guarantee He will bring somebody along that same path that will find refreshment from that well. That's my first rabbit trail. You might just write a little cross-reference. If you ever read through Job again, write a little cross-reference to Psalm 84, verse 6. Where did I stop? Verse 21. Now you're nothing. The Amplified Bible is really good in verse 21. It says, "You see my terror and my dismay, and because you believe me to be a victim of God's anger, you're afraid to sympathize with me." That was kind of it in a nutshell, wasn't it? They thought Job was cursed. Job thought he was cursed, but he couldn't figure out why. Everything was great between me and God, and all of a sudden calamity broke loose, and I have no idea why. But people who think like these three guys think, and like a lot of church people think today, that if you're a good person, nothing bad will ever happen in your life, and if bad stuff has happened, it's because you're a naughty person. And that's just not necessarily true. It could be true, or it could not be true. God could have other purposes for suffering in your life, and that might not be because of your sin. But people who think there's only one excuse and one reason for that happening are a little slow to take your side. You know, if you're bleeding in the shark tank, they don't want to get close to you because they don't want to get attacked by the sharks. You know what I mean? I grew up in a denomination that was like that with divorced people. That was about the worst sin that you could commit in that denomination. Before I came to Calvary Chapel, if you were divorced, it was like being a leper. And nobody, if the people saw you in the grocery store, they'd be afraid to come over and talk to you, lest somebody from the church would see them talking to you. And, you know, now you're consorting with a known felon, or I don't know what, you know, the way people can be. So I thought it was kind of a perceptive thing. Job says, look, you think I'm suffering because God's mad at me, and that's why you're afraid to sympathize. You're afraid that if you stand next to me, you're going to be in the target zone. And of course, that was not true. Have you ever been there? We've been there where certain people that love to hang out with you now are afraid to hang out with you because they didn't want to catch whatever it was that you had. I have been there. We talked last night. One of the brothers up there had some very nasty things done to him. Lies that were told about him. He had to go to court to clear his name. And he said, you know, the worst part about it is that some people believe the nasty stuff. And he said, after a while, you'd feel dirty. You know it's not true, but because of the way people treat you, you feel dirty. And Job is saying, yeah, that's the way you guys are making me feel. Verse 22, did I ever say bring something to me or offer a bribe for me from your wealth or deliver me from the enemy's hand or redeem me from the hand of my oppressors? Who invited you, Eliphaz? Who invited you to even come here? Have I ever asked you for anything? Teach me and I'll shut up. I'll hold my tongue. I looked that word up because it seemed to be a pivotal word in this section. The way Hebrew poetry works is you have one thought and then you elaborate on it, you restate it, you make contrasting phrases. So often you'll, in the book of Job, in these middle chapters, you'll read one statement and there'll be about 10 statements after that that are restatements of the same thing, in other words, different examples or even contrasts. So this seemed to be the pivotal word. I looked the word teach up. It's an interesting word, and I remember when we studied the Psalms, David used it a lot. It means be specific. It was the word used for archery, for shooting arrows and hitting the target. Interesting word for teaching. But what he's saying is, well, let me just finish reading what he says here. Verse 24, teach me and I'll hold my tongue. Cause me to understand where I have erred. How forceful are right words, but what does your reproving prove? New King James says, what does your arguing prove? I looked that word up too, and the Hebrew word is better translated reproving. In fact, it's kind of a play on words in Hebrew. What does your reproving prove? So be specific. Tell me. You said that this is all my fault. Well, what sin have I actually been guilty of? Help me to understand what I did wrong. Your words would be really powerful, verse 25, if you were right. But you're just vaguely reproving me. And how does that prove anything? Do you intend to rebuke my words and the speeches of a desperate one, which are like wind? Remember back in the first part of this chapter, he says, look, I know I'm not being rational right now. Consider my pain. But if I've done something wrong, at least be specific. Tell me what it is. Yes, you overwhelm the fatherless, you undermine your friend. Now, therefore, be pleased to look at me. That's a very polite way of saying, look at me, because I won't lie to your face. Yield now. Let there be no injustice. In other words, back off of your accusation. You're accusing me unjustly. Concede that my righteousness still stands. I haven't done anything wrong. Was that true? Come on. Yes, it was. How do we know it's true? Because Job said so? No, because God said so. God says this guy's blameless. Nothing of this that happened to Job happened because he had done anything wrong. So keep that in mind, because every time he's defending himself, he's telling the truth. Is there an injustice on my tongue? Verse 30, can't my taste discern the unsavory? In other words, don't I know the difference between right and wrong? You know what's just so discouraging about the whole middle part of this book? They didn't believe him. In fact, we're going to see, we'll finish chapter 8 tonight, and we won't get to hear Job answering back his second friend, Bildad, but Bildad just piles on. Bildad says, not only are you a filthy sinner, and that's where all this happened, but now you're guilty of more sin because you won't admit that you're a filthy sinner. I told you the story of, I had this guy after me for years who was convinced that every other human, and at this time I was traveling all over the world. I was ministering to 60,000 people in a year's time. And he said all those people were deceived about me. All those people that thought I was okay were wrong. And he was the only one that really knew me. And when people would ask him about me, he would say, well, he's not repentant. And I would say, but I don't have to repent of stuff I didn't do. But in his mind, he just, and there are people out, and the reason I'm saying all of this is there's people out there like that. You may bump into them sometime. They form an idea in their minds of who you really are, and they won't listen to your defense. They don't believe what you say. At the root of it is arrogance. At the root of it is they trust their opinion more than anything. And so you're going to see Bildad pile on later, and poor Job, he just gets surrounded. Chapter 7 is depressing because he's talking about the futility of his life, the agony of his life, the brevity of his life. And that's why before we started, I had you circle verse 7 of chapter 7. Because Job is absolutely convinced that he's got a very short time to live, few months at the most, and he's out of here, and the whole rest of that time is going to be in, he's going to be in this horrible pain. He's never going to figure out why, and that's his view on his life, and it was absolutely not true. If you're struggling right now, whoever's listening to this, people in this room or people online, we need somebody to raise our view and get God's perspective on things, because you can get swallowed up thinking this is all my life's ever going to be. And that's one of the reasons I love the book of Job, because despite everything that he says, God never holds any of this against him. All this whining, all this negativity. I mean, I think verse 7 is probably, if God was into the positive and negative confession thing, like some people think he is, you know, Job's future would have been sealed in verse 7 of chapter 7 when he says, that's it. I'm never going to see good again the rest of my life. Not only was that not true, but his pain and suffering only lasted about 24 more hours. So instead of God saying, well, Joe, sorry, that's a negative confession, buddy. I had great plans for you until you made that stinking negative confession, and now you're stuck. No, God knew it was only going to be a day, and it was all going to change. So let's read this depressing chapter 7. Is there not a time of hard service for a man on earth? Are not his days also like the days of a hired man? Like a servant who earnestly desires the shade, like a hired man who eagerly looks for his wages or payday. That's, in a nutshell, that's Job saying, life is hard and then you die. Pretty much that was his philosophy of his life at this time. That, by the way, was not his experience. It's another thing that happens when we just can't see things God's way. All we can see is where we're at right now. But Job had enough time to raise 10 kids. I don't know how long that would take. But he was, you know, he had quite a few years on the earth of being nothing but blessed by God. And as if you do the math and you add up the days, include the 7 days that his three friends sat there, it could have been as little as a week and maybe as much as 2 weeks that Job was actually suffering. But his view of his entire life was suffering, 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 and no payday. And it was not true. But it sure felt true. So I have been allotted months of futility. This is as far as he could see. He was like, yeah, maybe I'll last a month or two. And wearisome nights have been appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be over? Because I've had my fill of tossing till dawn. You ever been in that place where all day long all you can think about is going to sleep, but then when you lay down and you realize you're not going to sleep, you just, let's get this over with. Let the sun come up and let me get on. That's what a hard existence that is. My flesh is caked with worms and dust, my skin is cracked and breaks out afresh. He's not exaggerating. This was really true. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. Boy, we just weren't meant to live without hope. That's why the Bible has so much to say about it. That's why it calls God, our God, the God of all hope. Remember that word? Interesting, the Hebrew word and the Greek word, Old and New Testament, both mean exactly the same thing. The words translated hope. They mean the confident expectation of future good. It's not to cross my fingers, oh, I hope everything's going to be okay. No, it's exactly the opposite of that. It's an expectation that things are going to be okay. And humans don't function very well when they lose hope. So guess what the enemy is going to attack second after he tries to attack your confidence in God's love for you? He's going to attack your hope. Yeah, God loves you. Too bad you're going to suffer the rest of your life. You're going to be an old maid. You know, you're going to be alone. You know, you're never going to get a job. Your kids are never going to repent. Your husband's never going to get saved. I mean, just whatever the thing is that the devil can poke that place in your heart that's going to hurt you and take away your hope, trust me, he will do it. But remember, he's a liar. Oh, remember that my life is a breath. My eye will never again see good. I looked that word up. If you remember when we studied Psalms, it's the Hebrew word tov, T-O-V. Mazel tov is basically good luck. It's the Jewish phrase for good luck. It's a fat word. It means pleasure. It means blessing. It means things working out efficiently. When he says my eyes are never going to see good, he's saying I'm never going to smile again. I'm never going to be happy. I'm never going to have a normal life that's worth living. I'm never going to experience God's blessing. All of that's wrapped up in that little three-letter word. I'm never going to see it again. Was that true? No, it wasn't true. You know what? It wasn't even true for 30 hours into the future. The more I think about this, the more I realize why God doesn't explain things to me more often. Well, there's lots of reasons, but one reason is he knows that in about 2 weeks or 2 days or 30 hours, I'm going to go, never mind. Because I'm going to realize that all of that stuff I was thinking was wrong. Can you look back over your life over the last 2 years, and do you want to take back a whole bunch of stuff that you said? Boy, I sure do. And I hold on to that thought because I realize I'm thinking right now about my future in a way that may be completely inaccurate. I look at my future, and all I see is a big, giant question mark. And a 61-year-old body that's fallen apart and thinking, you know, it just don't go there. You know where you need to look when you're looking at your future? Look at your God. How's he feel about you? What's he able to do? Can he change everything in one day? Oh, he's famous for it. See, as we back off of Job's scene and we look at the whole picture, we know what's happening. We know there's limits. As far as Job's thinking, his worst nightmare came true. What's next? The only thing would be that I would die and God won't even let me die. But we know. We look at the whole story. That's why I wrote that thing on that little piece of paper that says, all disappointment with God is premature. Don't you wish you could record these few verses that Job is saying right here, play them back to him, what, a week later, 2 days later? You know, when he's 50 years into God blessing him twice as much as he's blessed him before, and he's got kids again and grandkids, and they're all sitting around having a barbecue. Oh, Job, can we play this for you? And you play a little thing that says, I'm never going to see good ever again. The most I've got is a couple of months, and they're going to be hell on earth. that you want to play out for. But you know what? God never held it against them. He knows we can't see the future. You know why he wants you to trust him? You know why he wants me to trust him when I don't understand? It's not an ego thing. He knows he's trustworthy. He knows I'm going to eat my words later. He wants me to trust him for me. So I'll be stable. So when the liar comes along and whispers his lies, I won't believe him. The eye of him who sees me will see me no more. While your eyes are upon me, I shall no longer be. As a cloud disappears and vanishes away, so he who goes down to the grave doesn't come up. He'll never return to his house, nor shall his place know him anymore. I'm just reminded of Eeyore. You know? I stink. I have bad breath. Life is horrible. And then just being able to have the creativity to just say that 20 different ways. What a waste of poetry. This is the danger of having a creative mind. Who was it that gave me the worst case scenario book? Was that you? Somebody gave me a book a few years ago on my birthday called The Worst Case Scenario. And I read through it and I laughed, but I thought, you know what? I've thought of way worse stuff than this. I'm famous for it. Oh, Job. Why is all this recorded for us? Well, for lots of reasons, but one of the reasons is that we won't be causing grief to our friends when they're suffering, like Job's friends did, but also that we would just be patient and wait for God to show us the plan before we make our judgments. Verse 11, therefore, in other words, my time is short, never see good again. Verse, therefore, Eliphaz, I'm not going to shut up. I'm not going to restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. In parentheses, should say, and in 24 hours, I will eat my words. Verse 12, I think is hilarious because it's obscure in English, but I looked it up and chased it down in Hebrew. And what he's basically saying, you guys, remember earlier he said, you're afraid to sympathize with me because you think God's mad at me. And that's why all this happened. You're afraid that's catching. Like if you sit here and if you're my friend and you sympathize with me, that you're going to suffer too. And verse 12, he says, am I a sea or a sea serpent that you set a guard over me? In other words, he says, do you actually think I'm dangerous? Is that what you're thinking? When I say, which he said more than once, my bed will comfort me and my couch will ease my complaint, then you scare me to death with dreams and terrify me with visions. Here comes my second rabbit trail. Remember Eliphaz's dream that he had back in chapter 4? Remember his whole, God told me to tell you, I had this dream. Ooh, it was creepy. It must have been God. It would just scare me to death. I was talking with somebody today whose name I won't mention about having a dream where Jesus on the cross was hovering over them, ready to fall on them and smash them, and how that just filled you with dread. And I've had similar dreams, and I thought, and we talked about it, and we thought, that wasn't from God. The whole statement of Jesus on the cross is not a threat. That's God's love. Somebody's messing with your brain. When you start having those kind of dreams, God does speak to people in dreams. I'm a guy that firmly believes that. But you know what? He's not creepy when he does it. But remember Eliphaz's whole thing? Well, I had this creepy dream. And, you know, God told me to tell you that you think you're better than him. How dare you? Was that true? No, it wasn't true. It wasn't God saying that. God knew Job's mind, and Job never said that to begin with. So that brings me to a little rabbit trail. Flip over to James chapter 3. Because as you go through your Christian life, you're going to have people come to you with a word from God.